Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Insperity. Expand your possibilities at Insperity.com.
Adam Hogg says...
They do have a really fast receiver room now. They have the speed, but I'm a big believer that you have to be able to play wide receiver, too. There's a difference. You can't just put a bunch of track stars out there.
Adam Hoag.
Great question, Dan.
Bears insider for NBC Sports Chicago.
Here's what I can tell you about what the Bears were doing.
Host of the Hoag and Johns podcast.
It's not just this spot. It is left tackle, too. They put all their chips in on a rookie that had back problems in college last year. Okay, even if these are new symptoms... That was risky.
Adam Hoag with Bernstein and Rahimi.
All right, go Bears.
On the Score.
Bears Friday on the Score is brought to you by Window Works. Window Works presents Bears Friday with half price savings at mywindowworks.com. And Dan, it's always nice to have Adam Hoag because, Adam, you're the one providing us focus today.
Yes,
we went
need
off
it.
The rails with Sox clinch talk because Wani and Liam Hendricks. And as a White Sox reporter and fan and Bears reporter, I know that at least watching the Sox clinch was a nice feeling for you, too.
Yes, had to do it from Hallis Hall, but that was all right. It was nice, and I liked that they were businesslike about it. I also would have been fine if they had gone nuts because it's really hard to win the division, but the way they handled it, I was like, okay, these guys mean business, and I like that.
Adam Hoag joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. The Bears insider for NBC Sports Chicago is at Adam Hoag on Twitter. He's also on our Twitch stream, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. You went through the film, as you do each week, and I thought your headline summed it up in pithy fashion, that Justin Fields, in his first extended action, looked inexperienced but not overwhelmed. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, and I think that's really important. Inexperience is expected. I mean, he's not experienced at the NFL level, so there's going to be mistakes and some things that you have to live with. Overwhelmed, there's a big difference. And I'd say, you know, a rookie quarterback that looks overwhelmed would be someone that you could just sort of tell they're standing back there. They don't really know what they're looking at. They're seeing some ghosts. You know, I hate to always bring Mitch Trubisky in the conversation, but like we saw with Mitch sometimes, where it was just obvious he wasn't reading the field well. Now, there were a couple instances in that game when I went back and watched the film where I did see, all right, I don't think Justin saw things the right way. One of them was the incompletion of Darnell Mooney down in the end zone, where I originally thought that was just a late throw. I thought Darnell was open and he just got to him a little late and then the ball ended up out of bounds. Now, that was true. Now, what I saw, however, when I went back and saw the end zone angle, Jimmy Graham was open. Marquise Goodwin was open. So there were two guys there, and it looked like he kind of skipped over those reads and went to Darnell Mooney, and it was too late. So I'm not saying it was perfect, but even in that moment, it's not like I saw crazy footwork and he just sort of one read and, oh, I got to scramble and get out of here. He did not look overwhelmed to me. He looked in control. He looked poised. I thought, you know, a couple times he drifted backwards into trouble instead of stepping up into the pocket. That, to me, is an example of inexperience, not just like, oh, no, I don't know what I'm doing. I think those are just small things that need to be corrected and will be the more he plays. So huge difference there between just being inexperienced and being overwhelmed. And overall, I liked what I saw big picture. If you're going to narrow in on the one game against the Bengals, yeah, it wasn't great. But big picture, what I'm looking at, bigger signs for the future, I was fine. I did not see things that worried me too much.
Yeah, those are positive steps for sure. And then I guess the next natural question is, you do this film study every week. So from game one to game two, what improvement did you see or even in game out of him?
From Fields specifically?
Yes.
See, it's hard. I'd probably have to go back more to the preseason because the sample size in week one was just also not only the fact he only had five snaps, but what they asked him to do, which wasn't much, like throw the ball 9 yards. Like, okay, he had one good throw, great. And then it's like flip the ball backwards on a reverse, and what are we doing out here? So from that standpoint, I was selfishly happy that there was like real tape to look at of him actually having to drop back, which I'd like to see this week against the Browns, them do a little bit less of that, maybe simplify things for him a little bit, not necessarily because he needs it, but because I think that's the best way to win this week, you know, and continue to move the ball. He's still a young quarterback, so let's not put him in situations that are going to bring more of that inexperience out of him. Make it as easy as possible for him. Get him on rollouts more. One thing I asked Bill Lazor about yesterday was there was a number of zone reads in that game against the Bengals where I thought he probably made the right decision to hand the ball off because the end or whoever the guy was that he was reading on the particular play didn't necessarily crash into the running back, which is what the quarterback's looking at on a zone read. However, I'm thinking he still sort of stopped his feet, and this guy can run a 4.4, and there's a lot of space on the edge to run. So if he had kept it, I think he probably would have run for a long ways. And so I wonder if they change the rules a little bit for him and say, hey, look, you know, if you, he doesn't have to crash down all the way. If he just sort of stops his feet, feel free to keep the ball and run because you're talented enough to go pick up 20 yards on that play. However, handing the ball off to David Montgomery right now is not a bad thing. That is one thing that from week one to week two looks outstanding to me. He looks really, really good. And so I think that's one of the big positives from this offense the first 2 weeks. As much as we like to complain about some things, the running game is there. And I actually do think Matt Nagy is doing a pretty good job of sticking with it.
Well, it wouldn't be the Bears without there being something Bearsy. And what's creeping in is the fact that they only completed one pass to a tight end for no yards of no consequence. So then the devil's in the explanation where Nagy's like, yeah, that can't happen. That's on me. So people start asking, well, this week, are you going to throw more to the tight end? And they say, well, yeah. And it gets in this weird, like, tail wagging the dog situation here where that's not how this works. You should throw to the tight end, like you say, because he's open. And if, in fact, they looked at the film, and I'm really happy you said that about Jimmy Graham. Why are they throwing at Jimmy Graham? Well, maybe on that play, your rookie quarterback missed him. And they can't say that or don't want to say that, and they know it. But where Nagy just says, that's on me, is a way of he just sort of falls on the grenade there and puts it out. But it ends up sounding so Bearsy. The answer is you throw to the tight end because the tight end has gotten open and the quarterback sees him. And that's just a sign of proper offensive function.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because I feel like the focus on the whole tight end conversation has been a little bit wrong. Look, there's going to be you can't do everything. Your opponent's always going to be trying to take something away, whether it's a running game, whether it's, hey, you know, they got these good tight ends. Let's take them out of the game. It changes from week to week. And so my issue with the tight ends right now early in the season isn't necessarily that, okay, there was one target and, you know, Cole Kmet. I didn't think that was a penalty. The end zone angle actually shows it was not a penalty at all. So that was just a bad call. You know, I think it has more – one is the tight end usage. Like, I'm a little confused at – I somewhat defended the decision to bring Jimmy Graham back this year, but that was under the idea that he was going to play more than 20% of the snaps. So I'm a little confused about that. Maybe they're just saving him. Maybe it's a matchup thing. I'm willing to give it a few more weeks before I really say, hey, this is really confusing why they kept him around. But there is some of that going on right now. I think penalties early on with Cole Kmet, even though I'm willing to give him a pass for the OPI last week because I don't think it was one, but the false start in week one against the Rams was an absolute drive killer. Can't happen when you're that close to the goal line. So that was one thing. But, yeah, you know, that play that I was talking about where Jimmy Graham was open, you know, that's a mesh concept where usually you're reading to the – usually you are. You're looking at the closest receiver that's coming across the formation in front of you, and that was Jimmy Graham, and he was open. So I don't necessarily know what Justin Fields' rules are on that particular play. It could be different. But I saw a big tight end whose job on this team right now is to catch touchdowns in the red zone, and he kind of skipped over that read. So I don't think that's a Matt Nagy problem. To me, on that particular play, I think it was a rookie quarterback not making the right read. But I'm guessing on that.
Well, and the fewer games that Jimmy Graham produces in, the better. Because I still think, and I go back to looking at that restructured salary, and the Bears are going to pay for him for another 4 years after this year. So he's definitely somebody who I I key in on, because we're paying for that production for a very long time. And once again, the tight end position being of so much focus, just the devotion of all the roster spots and then the money, it's something that I'm very much going to be watching just the entire season, because they better be getting their money's worth somehow.
Yeah, again, look, if the season's over and he has 9 touchdowns again, okay, then I think it was worth it. But, you know, let's see how this plays out. The restructuring doesn't necessarily bother me too much, because I think the salary cap's going to shoot back up after, you know, this weird year with COVID. And that's more of so the money sort of being on the book for a few years. He actually got paid the cash already on the restructure. But, you know, the other option there, instead of restructuring him, was to let him go before week one, and you did not owe him anything in that case. And instead, they like, all right, we're keeping him around. We're going to restructure it to open up some cap space. This is going to be on the books for a few years. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. You better find some touchdowns with Jimmy Graham at some point this season. And I guess I'm willing to give him a pass for last week, because I saw a guy who was actually open in a moment and was probably going to score a touchdown if the quarterback had thrown him the ball.
I asked Anthony Heron about Damian Williams yesterday, and he sees what I see, and that is somebody who is just lacking suddenness, who doesn't seem to have, for a position that relies on quick twitch, that. And I'm wondering if you see the same thing, because Nagy really likes and or trusts him based on his snap count.
Yeah, I heard that yesterday. You know, it's interesting, because I actually did not hate what he did in week one. I thought they found some ways to get him the ball, catching the ball, and he did fine. I did not think there was a huge drop-off when David Montgomery came out of the game for a little bit with that finger injury he was dealing with against the Rams. I thought the offense continued to move. However, yeah, against the Bengals, I thought that I can see what he was talking about there. There's just, and part of it is almost him getting punished because David Montgomery looks so good right now. Mm-hmm. And Montgomery is obviously running with an incredible purpose, and he's finding plays where, I mean, there was a play in that game where he got hit like 3 yards in the backfield and did an incredible spin move while he was being held by the tackler to somehow get back to the line of scrimmage. I mean, that's the type of run that goes down in the books as no gain, but it's really, in my mind, a pretty huge 3 yard run based on where the contact initially occurred. So I do think that there's an obvious drop off, but that's most backfields, right? When you have a really good running back, there's going to be a drop off. But the point of bringing him in here was to give the Bears more than one option. I really like that room coming out of week one. I think it was a step back in week two a little bit, but I guess overall I'm not too worried about it, and we'll just have to continue to see how that plays out over the next couple weeks.
Good sign. Eddie Goldman practicing back-to-back days.
Yes. That's much better than practicing one day and then not practicing it all the rest of the week. I think we obviously saw a setback last week. So this is a good sign. And I guess this is a good point to bring up the matchup this week. Like this matchup. I think that this match, I'm not necessarily very confident the Bears are going to win, because I do think the Browns overall are the better football team. But in terms of matchups, which is what this sport is, the Browns have a really good running game and a passing game that doesn't work so well if they can't establish the running game. Well, the Bears have been outstanding stopping the run, and they could get Eddie Goldman back this week. We know they're going to get Mario Edwards Jr. back, and even without those two guys, I mean, that D-line with Angelo Blackson in there, who I think is an underrated signing, along with Akeem Hicks, Bilal Nichols, Robert Quinn, Khalil Mack, like, they all played incredibly well last week as a unit, and now you're going to maybe throw Eddie Goldman back in there. I just think that this plays into the Bears' hands defensively, even if they still have some concerns in the back end in their secondary. And I'll take it a step further, too. I mean, this offense that the Browns have, it's Kevin Stefanski, came over from Minnesota. He's done a really good job in Cleveland so far, establishing what's a very similar system. You have to run the ball first, and then you have a quarterback. Like, Baker Mayfield, to me, is very similar to Kirk Cousins right now.
Well, they need a lead. They're a tough team to beat if they're running from the front. And it was the same way with Kirk Cousins, where he decided, today I'm going to have a good game, and we are up 14-6. You knew you were in some trouble.
Absolutely. And so I think from that standpoint, it's very similar to what we've seen in some of these Bears-Vikings matchups. And I don't know if you guys know this, Matt Nagy against the Vikings right now, he's 5-1. He's been very good in these matchups against Minnesota. The one loss was last year on Monday Night Football when the Bears lost 19-13. That was at the absolute worst of that offense last year. Remember, I think that was the first game Bill Lazor was calling plays, but Nick Foles was still the quarterback. The offensive line was an absolute mess. And it was about as bad as it was getting. It was still a six-point game. Now, I'm comparing one team to a different team, but I think in terms of style of play and some of the personnel out there, even though it's different personnel, I think it's very similar. And the Bears are catching a break with Landry being out for Cleveland. So defensively, I think they're going to be okay against the Browns. The question is, with a rookie quarterback, can they do enough to score enough points and win? But I think the Bears are going to be in this game. I think this is an underrated game on the NFL slate this weekend.
Wow, that's a vote of confidence for sure, because especially with the news about Odell Beckham being back, I just am very wary. But also just Akeem Hicks' illness. I'm assuming he's going to play on Sunday. It is a different run defense when he and Eddie Goldman are there, period.
I don't know what's going on with Akeem Hicks, but I remember this last year too when we were like even more on super alert with anybody who was sick at any given time because of COVID.
Sure.
I feel like he was sick like every other week last year. He would just show up in the injury report, illness, but then he would be fine. So I don't know if that's going on again here or what, but I don't know. I think Akeem's going to be fine. The bigger question is Eddie Goldman going to play? The one injury that does concern me, guys, is for Tashaun Gibson to pop up on the injury report Wednesday as limited and then not practice the next day. Oftentimes that means that the injury happened in practice on the day where they were limited. They were limited because they didn't finish the practice, right? Because then maybe they got hurt. I don't know if that's 100% the case here, but that does have me a little worried. Might have a Deion Bush, DeAndre Houston, Carson situation playing next to Eddie Jackson, but we'll see if we can get more clarity from Matt Nagy today on that one.
All right, your alma mater, Soldier Field, tomorrow, Wisconsin against Notre Dame. Your thoughts?
Well, my thought is this, is I'm not going to be able to handle this, though, if Jack Cohen outplays Graham Mertz. I'm not going to be able to handle it at all. That's that. I mean, it's going to be very, very stressful because this is the guy that you basically pushed out the door to bring in Graham Mertz, who throws 5 touchdowns in his first game and then really hasn't been that great ever since. So it should be fun. I wish I was going. I'm not going to the game, but I'll be watching and then I'll be flying to Cleveland. I will actually be in the stands tomorrow night, though, in Cleveland for the White Sox game.
Oh, they need some more people in those stands, man. That Game 2 crowd looks scant.
Yeah, I get back to the famous picture from old Comiskey. Is it you and your dad in the dugout?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Someday I want to recreate that picture with my son in it, because he's about the same age that I was in that photo. He might actually be a little bit older at this point. But yeah, that's a good one. I have it actually here in my office.
I'm sure that the White Sox could make that happen. Seems like a reasonable request.
Probably. We could probably get it done.
Safe travels, Adam. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Adam.
That is Adam Hoge. So there's a bunch of cool stuff coming up in the next segment. Not only are we going to hear from the Bears offensive coordinator about how he's preparing his young quarterback to face the Cleveland Browns, but if you are a fan of a particular kind of rock music, you can call it what you want, blues rock or gospel rock,
that rock and roll,
American soul kind of thing, I've got something very special that is happening in our fair city in which you are going to find yourself interested. So all that is straight ahead on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I'm going to go out there on Sunday and play my best, and of course just try to come out with the win, and that's my main focus. My main focus isn't, you know, winning the starting job. You know, I think that's going to come with time. So my main focus right now is just to prepare the best I can and, you know, go out Sunday and execute at a high level.
That's Justin Fields. Knows what to say, knows how to say it, and I believe him. I don't think he's just sort of rattling off cliches, because he embodies a lot of what he says. There is a steadiness about him that belies his youth.
I would agree with that. I also think that's what happens when you start for a major college football program like Ohio State, because anything that he says, people are going to pay attention to, key in on, and I don't know, maybe use it throughout the week on sports radio stations, kind of like here. That's what happens when you quarterback a major football program like that.
Before we get to the Bears information, how about this? Our sister station, 93 WXRT, is going to present Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats in the Budweiser concert series at Gallagher Way on October 8th.
The concerts are back.
The concerts are back, and these are fairly intimate. These are not in Wrigley Field. This is an outside in the plaza. It's, what, like 1,400 people or something like that? Tickets are on sale Monday, 10 a.m. at GallagherWay.com and 93XRT.com. I don't know if you're a fan of Nathaniel Rateliff. I know he's been here before. I think he visited XRT. He's got kind of a Shane vibe, and I don't mean to insult him in that way. But just
angry, likes to cook meat.
Okay, kind of probably, but kind of the look. And he's got the song SOB is really good. Never Get Old, I think, is one of his other ones that I like, but it is difficult to define exactly the genre that he's in. Some of the stuff sounds like the Blues Brothers could play it, like full band stuff, but some of it's kind of gospel-y, but he's really good. He's got a real signature sound, and he's just going to be at Gallagher Way on October 8th, again, Monday, 10 a.m., GallagherWay.com, 93XRT.com.
It is a good venue. I went to the Lizzo concert there, and that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
God, she got so much bigger than that. I mean, to play that venue, like, can you imagine?
Oh.
Like she's arena, you know, filling mega enormo domes now.
Yes. So, safe to say, they get good acts, and it's a great venue to watch somebody. And
they get them on the way up.
Yes. It's a fun place to watch a concert.
Wow. Okay. So, Bill Lazor is nominally the offensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears, even if he's not calling plays for the moment. But he's available to talk about how they're preparing, and he's got a new quarterback with a very special set of skills, and he's trying to figure out how they're going to work that all in.
Things are different. Went through some quarterback change here last year, too. Some of it is the same, and that you try from all the accumulated reps of spring and training camp and preseason games to take that information in of what you think best fits that player. First, a regular season start makes it a little bit different, but he's played in big games before. I think you all have seen him enough to, you would probably bet that he's going to handle it just fine.
Bill, what was he like? This is the first time you've had some film to look at with him. I mean, other than the five plays in week one, but a substantial amount of film to look at with him after the game, kind of go over those corrections. What was Justin like in those meetings and handling all that?
No different than he is at practice. I think one of the things that's been impressive about him from the beginning is that he's willing to be coached, really wants everyone wants to be great, right? But willing to do what it takes. And part of that is being coached and working together with the coaches. And the great thing is the dynamic of the room is still fantastic, and that you got three quarterbacks in there who all communicate. They communicate great with Coach Flip. They communicate with the head coach. I mean, they communicate with each other.
Bill, as you come up with a game plan this week, how do you walk the line or the balance between doing what you guys have been doing all year offensively, but also, you know, fine-tuning things to Justin's strengths?
That's a great question, and that is what we're doing, is walking the line, balancing. I think you add in, right, so now you add in, we talked about it last week, how do you develop a game plan? You part of it is, what do you do well, part of it is what hurts the team, what their weaknesses are that you want to attack, and part of it is the matchups. Now you add in another layer of changing that position, who's starting at that position. And so it does add more layers. The easy answer is to say, well, just shrink it down. Well, he's also proven over time that he can handle a pretty good amount. So if you go to the point where, well, because we have a new starter at this position and he's a rookie, let's shrink it down. If you go too small, you don't have enough bullets in your belt to win the game. So I think we're looking for the right amount, and that doesn't always mean shrink. It just means what's the right amount so that we have the weapons, because none of us know how the game's going to go, so we have to have stuff if we're up by a lot, if it's a close game, if we're down by a lot, make sure you have enough on the sheet. Yeah, it causes a lot of questions to come up, but that's what we do.
I know it's what you do, but the idea of your entire opportunity to win based on bullets in your belt, the number of plays, like that's your only salvation. I want Justin Fields to be so good it blows all of that up. I want him to be so good that that's not what it's about anymore. Their play sheet, the bullets in the belt, the magical number of things they can concoct. I want them to win because of things that he does that they haven't even thought of yet. I just smash the whole thing. Let him be great. Build it inductively. Say, what do you want to do on the football field, and how can we make you more likely to do that?
Yeah, that's not what they do, though.
I know. It makes me crazy.
This is the test, because you finally got the quarterback that you said that you were scouting for so long. You also said it takes 4 years to fully realize the offense.
You know what I'm saying, though? It's like we have to have – these are our lifeline. Our lifeline is the number of plays. Maybe sometimes in this league, you see a quarterback who can do things that once the play starts, you didn't think. Maybe it's not supposed to go like that. He thinks it can go like that, and he thinks he can go over here or pick up these yards or wave that guy open or throw that guy open because he can. It's so constrained.
It's also really antithetical to the idea of running the ball so much. I loved that David Montgomery got 20 carries. But you know what that means? You're probably going to run fewer plays because running the ball takes more time. I really hope that they build it off of the run still to not make the offense one-dimensional so he can do some of the things that he does well. I hope we see bootleg. I hope we see him move. But I also hope that we do see the chance for him to hold on to the ball a little longer because the offensive line is blocking for him. And then maybe he finds somebody open downfield and they actually take the top off the defense. All of that would be great.
Great point for the 7-7-3. If we are going by where we've set the bar, at least it's refreshing to not have heard every question answered with a hosanna for Andy Dalton. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. That happened. And we did. Any question about Justin did not immediately become some sort of referendum also in Andy Dalton. So, yes, indeed, you are right. And we do give thanks for that. We have the Midday Midway coming up. And I know what story you're doing because I see who just walked in. And I am doing, I meant to do this last week, but we got interrupted and ended up doing other things. But when life imitates a Warner Brothers cartoon. That's next on the Midday Midway on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Jay Zolowski.
The first half or the second half, you know, they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
It's the Midday Midway on our Bears Friday. We started out by congratulating the Chicago White Sox on clinching their division and enjoying that, replaying some of Liam Hendricks on The Score on the afternoon show yesterday, and Dave Wannstedt just being so Dave Wannstedt. Adam Hoge was great on both the Bears-White Sox and the upcoming college game tomorrow. We heard from Bill Lazor, and we told you about the Nathaniel Rateliff concert that's upcoming. All right, I found this funny. I think you will, too. There was a power outage that disrupted half of New York City's subway system for several hours.
That's not funny.
Stranded hundreds of passengers, and they think they know what the cause was. It was an unprecedented breakdown. It affected more than 80 trains. Here's what happened.
Oh, squirrel and transformer?
No, better. It was caused by someone accidentally pressing an emergency power off button.
What?
Yes, there's actually a button that is emergency power off entire subway that somebody pushed accidentally.
How do you push it accidentally?
Well, okay. Here's what they said. Kathy Hochul is looking it all over. but officials said restoration of the service was delayed because passengers on two of the stuck trains walked out onto the tracks. The button was pushed after a power dip lasting several milliseconds at 8:25 p.m., and the subsequent discovery that several pieces of mechanical equipment at the New York City Transit Rail Control Center stopped functioning. They said control center staff worked to get the equipment back into service, then someone pushed the emergency button, causing all electrical equipment connected to one of the power distribution units at the center to lose power. That's what it was. They have a giant button that says turn off subway. What does this do? What does it say? Turn off subway. What does it mean? God. Turn off subway. Ka-junk.
I thought it sounded more like an awooga.
Boom, boom. Whee!
It's bad when we're doing our own drops.
I know, but it's just... Like I have a button for anybody to push.
Emergency. Don't push this button. It's real cute. You don't want to do it. It squeaks and everything. Well, I had to call in a special guest because it's Fat Bear Week. Yes, deserving
class. Go Bears.
Yes. Not just the Chicago Bears, not just Bear fans, and it's kind of turning into bear weather. But no, it is actual Fat Bear Week. It really gets started next week, but they've added a lovely category. The cuteness. They've added junior fat bears.
It's Fat Bear Junior.
Baby Fat Bear.
The voting just opened, actually, for Fat Bear Junior.
So, Fat Bear Week just seemed on brand with our former colleague, now collared shirt, Jay Zawoski,
who's
kind
there.
Enough to join us.
Hi.
Hi. Hey.
We can't quit you.
Suit.
It's been a week, and I miss you guys. And I hear nothing. I hear nothing of the score anymore, and it's very sad.
What? Really? They grounded you from the score?
I'm in so many meetings and Zooms and all sorts of things. I am very much a suit very quickly.
Oh, man.
But it's good. It's exciting. Exciting times ahead.
Yeah, sounds exciting.
Well, the meetings are. The Zoom.
Like,
the Zoom,
you're really making it sound exciting.
Well, we're eventually migrating over to Google Suite for our email. So I had to go through those trainings, which are super fun, even though I've been using Gmail for 20 years. Anyway.
So
bears.
How's that going?
Bears.
Do they teach you that Google is a tool that people use on the internet?
Tell me more about this Google.
Yeah, I feel like it's catching on.
No, it's been fun. It's been really. It's been an exciting and fast-moving week. I went through 112 resumes this week.
Oh, you sound so businessy.
I know. It's going to be fun, though. The end result will be fun.
Well, how do you feel about going through Fat Bear resumes? Because we got ourselves a final.
That's what I was talking about. Well, I wasn't talking about resumes for the job. I was talking about Fat Bear resumes.
I've been looking at 747, Bear 910, Walker the Pork Chop.
Well, those are the big bears, though. Baby bears are the cute ones. Baby bears are 128 yearling versus 132 spring cub. And in case you don't know what Fat Bear Week is, it's not about football. It's just
it's not Jason Peters.
He's gonna, if he rips your arms off, I'm okay with it. That man knows how to move it at 360
pounds.
He does.
He's a large human being.
So Fat Bear Week is the Katami National Park in Southwest Alaska. And the reason you celebrate fat bears is because they're eating all the salmon to hibernate. And that's a sign of a healthy ecosystem. You want salmon. You want them to be happy and in cold water, which we've seen, unfortunately, a lot of
them. They're not happy when they get grabbed out of the air by a 900 or 1,200 pound grizzly.
Well, they don't know what's happening. They're just trying to swim upstream.
They're going to die anyway.
But the whole idea is... Nature is doing what nature does, and that's a good thing, and that's why we celebrate Fat Bear Week, because the fatter the bears, that means the more the salmon. So we have Junior Fat Bear Week, and that's the final coming up, and then Big Old Fat Bear Week is next week, and I didn't realize how country I sounded until I said it out loud. And if you look
Big
at
Big Old Fat Bear Week.
Big Old Fat Bear Week is next week.
I'm your host, Layla, and these are the Big Old Fat Bears.
God, I'm telling you, it's a conscious effort. It's not like I like.
Is there like a flannel shirt and Daisy Dukes?
It's not like I wear. Well, that would be cold in Southwest Alaska. It's not like I am consciously like thinking about every sentence to not sound Texan. But sometimes if I just roll into something, I'm like, oh, there it was. So yes, on explore.org's Twitter account, which is just adorable, they have Bear 747, who is quite large and walking and doesn't care that he has a tapeworm in his rear.
Yeah, it's kind of nasty.
You get used to it.
Jay, that means it's on the way out, at least.
I don't know. I don't know anything about
this. It's not getting in. I mean, I think that means it worked through the system. It wasn't hanging around.
But if you just need to see like some happy nature video, including sockeye salmon cam, I suggest you check out Explore Org's Twitter because it's pretty adorbs. Jay, where is the I'm Fat podcast with supporting Fat Beer Week? And doesn't the I'm Fat podcast have a special episode coming up on Saturday?
A very special episode.
Oh, yeah, we do. Well, first of all, anything fat culture, we are 100% behind. And I just want to praise these bears. It's not just the size. It is the rapid weight gain. That is impressive. I mean, there is junk in the trunk on these bears. It's just unbelievable. Saturday, though, Rick and I will be at the Homewood Fall Fest. We're judging the chili cook-off from 2 to 3. Then we're doing a live I'm Fat podcast from 3 to 4. So it's going to be fun. But Homewood Fall Fest is awesome with or without us. Lots of good food, lots of good crafts. So come and say hi. It's in downtown Homewood, Illinois, not Alabama. And come see the I'm Fat podcast live. Okay. And I'm selling my book, too. I'll be selling signed copies of my book.
815 says, oh, I get it. So if a bear gets fat, it's a celebration. I get fat, it's a problem. I'm sick of these double standards. That's why we're here for you. Yeah. The I'm Fat podcast is here for you.
Yeah, and you don't hibernate. They get fat because they have to.
Don't we kind of?
They need to have nourishment.
I have to get fat for the brand.
One of my favorite Twitter replies to the hockey stick video that we did with you, Jay. Where you ran between the two.
Yeah, you enjoyed so much.
That is awesome.
Yeah, you hated it. But I liked how somebody goes, I thought Jay was fat. I'm disappointed.
What are people looking at? They must be looking at the bald spot I always forget I have until I see a video of myself from behind. No. Like, oh, God. No. Yeah, I'm still a chonky boy. I'm not, you know. What did Rick say? I don't want to put it on the air, but man, what... Rick is starting to lap me if he's not lying about his weight.
We went through this years ago.
I don't believe him.
When I estimated his weight, like, no, he can't be. I said, yeah, he is thick with many C's. He is just like he's big boned. Like his head weighs 50 pounds.
Just a large human being.
He's huge. No, he's that's how football play like he's just big. He's one of those guys of like the stock from the tundra, you know, he's you know, like lives in the cold and carries wood around, you know.
Rick and I are really sad because we wanted to go to the Wisconsin State Fair and unfortunately the weather did not cooperate. Did I tell you guys about this?
Yeah, it was like the thunderstorms and everything. But
and the massive amounts of heat.
That too. You'll get
they had things like Rick Camp.
Yeah.
What? Man, you were on it with the drops today, Mike Rankin. So I just want Jay here in general, but also under the guise to celebrate Fat Bear Week, because I feel like Fat Bear Week is important.
And judging the chili cook-off is no small thing, because there are so many variations of chili, and it's so much, so subjective, so many personal preferences.
Well, beans don't belong in chili, period.
I disagree.
Rick will agree with you. I'm indifferent, but I think I prefer them just because it makes it heartier.
I prefer them, and I can use up to three different kinds of my chili, because I've never made the same chili twice. But I picture the Simpsons with that, whatever that with the weird pepper is that gives you the hallucinations.
I love spicy food. I just want to be able to get through the podcast right after the taste testing. I need to know how close our tent is to the Porta Johns. That is important information. Oh,
see, that's why it's bad to have the beans in the chili.
Chili cook-off Porta Johns.
But I just
let's go.
Unless it's a white chili, I'm just not a huge fan of like beans in the chili. It's not doesn't do it for me.
I also don't know if I can't identify flavors. Like, you know, Dan can do that. I'm just, I don't know. It's spicy. I don't know.
I like spicy
and salty. Those are the two flavors I know.
I don't know.
All of those sound great. Like, chili sounds really nice today, especially because, again, it's just that time of year. I'll accept it, I guess, that fall is happening because Dan's like, hope you enjoyed your summer. This is all the stuff that happened when you missed our show.
These retroactive narratives of lies, I didn't say it that way.
Yes, you did.
No, you heard it that way, but I didn't say it that way.
And then you evil laughed and threw something into a cauldron and
that's how we started our show the other day.
Oh, Mike Rankin's on it too. Now what do you say?
I'll take the fifth on that. I'm not going to say anything. I might incriminate myself.
As to the actual cauldron, well, maybe that's made up.
Jay, thanks for coming by.
We miss you.
Go to break. You're late.
Matt Miller talks football with us. Keep it here. You got the score.
Bye. Bye, Jay.